Ever think about like a lease that would just let your landlord
Yeah.
totally off the hook,
Oh, yeah.
even if they're negligent?
Yeah.
Like you get hurt because it's something they should have fixed,
Right.
but you signed away your right to sue them.
Totally.
Well, that's exactly what happened in O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co.
Uh-huh.
It's a case out of Illinois
Yeah.
that really dives into this tricky area
Yeah.
where freedom of contract kind of bumps up against tenant protection.
Absolutely.
So this case, it's from the 1950s in Chicago
Yeah.
during like a major housing shortage. Can you
Huge.
imagine?
Oh, yeah.
People desperate for a place to live,
Absolutely.
landlords with tons of leverage.
Yeah.
And that's where Elle O'Callaghan comes in.
That's right.
She signs a standard lease that includes this thing called an exculpatory clause,
Yeah.
which basically says the landlord, Waller Beckwith in this case, isn't liable for injuries caused by their own negligence.
Right.
Tragically, O'Callaghan passed away before the case went to trial.
Right.
But the legal battle that followed
Oh, yeah.
really digs into some core issues we're still grappling with today.
Absolutely. Still very relevant.
So it's more than just a personal tragedy.
Yeah.
It's about the big picture of how much power landlords should have. And then there's this added layer here.
Right.
The jury actually ruled in favor of O'Callaghan's estate,
Yeah.
awarding them $14,000.
That's right. They did.
Wow.
And that's where the real legal drama begins, because the appellate court overturns the decision,
What?
siding with the landlord
No
and
way.
saying that exculpatory clause, it's enforceable.
Well.
So this ping-ponging of legal opinions sends the case all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court.
Oh, wow.
And their decision really sets a precedent
Right.
that's still echoing in legal discussions even today.
So what was the Supreme Court's final word on this?
Well, they did acknowledge the housing shortage, but they ultimately ruled in favor of the landlord,
Oh, wow.
upholding the appellate court's decision.
Wow.
Justice Schaper's majority opinion
Huh?
really leaned heavily on freedom of contract,
Okay.
saying that people should be able to enter into agreements freely,
Right.
even if those agreements shift risk in a seemingly uneven way.
Interesting.
So the court's view was that landlord-tenant relationships, these are private matters,
Okay.
not on the same level as, say, a public utility,
Right.
where you just don't have any other options.
Okay.
So they drew a pretty clear line in the sand.
So it sounds like they drew a pretty clear line in the
They
sand
did.
between what they saw as private
That's right,
contracts
yeah.
and situations where the courts might step in to protect certain parties.
Exactly. And their reasoning went even a step further.
Okay.
They argued that while housing shortages are tough, yeah, they're temporary,
Okay.
and they shouldn't be a reason to just toss out contracts. Essentially, they said it's up to lawmakers, not judges, to craft housing policy.
So the freedom of contract argument kind of trumped the concerns about unequal bargaining power in this case.
That seemed to be the gist of the majority opinion.
Okay.
But of course, there were dissenting voices on the court,
Right.
and their perspective offers a whole other way of looking at this.
Okay.
Justices Bristow and Daley,
Yeah.
they wrote a pretty scathing dissent,
Really?
arguing that upholding the exculpatory clause completely gutted the entire purpose of negligence law.
Wow.
Their point was, if a landlord can just contract away liability,
Right.
what's the point of having laws meant to protect tenants from harm?
That raises a really interesting point.
Yeah.
They're basically saying that true freedom of contract can't exist when the playing field is so uneven.
Absolutely.
Were there any other arguments that kind of stood out in the dissent?
Yeah, their dissent also took issue with the majority's comparison of landlord-tenant relationships to other kinds of contracts. They argued that in other situations where there's a clear power imbalance, like with employment or transportation,
Yeah.
the courts don't usually allow these kinds of blanket waivers of liability.
Okay.
Like, think about it. You can't just sign a contract saying your employer isn't responsible if they're negligent and you get hurt on the job.
Yeah.
They saw a real double standard at play here.
It seems like they were really pushing back against this compartmentalization of housing,
Yeah.
saying, hey, this is a fundamental need,
Right.
and we should be way more cautious about allowing these kinds of waivers when people's basic safety is at stake.
Absolutely.
It's a really compelling argument,
Yeah.
but the majority seemed pretty firm
Yeah.
in their belief that this was an issue for lawmakers to address.
Right.
Did they reference any specific legislation that might be relevant here?
They did mention rent control laws.
Okay.
as an example of the legislature already being involved in housing issues.
Okay.
So their logic was, if lawmakers want to regulate these exculpatory clauses in leases, they can just do so directly.
Mm.
So it comes down to this classic debate about the role of the courts.
Right.
Should they stick to a strict interpretation of existing law, or should they be more proactive in addressing these potential injustices?
Right.
Even if it means stretching these legal boundaries.
And this tension between freedom of contract and protecting vulnerable parties.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop with this one case. Right.
Right.
It feels like there's a direct line from these debates in the 1950s to conversations we're having today.
Totally.
About housing affordability and tenant rights.
Absolutely.
And the role of government in ensuring safe and accessible housing for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This case, it forces us to confront these fundamental questions.
So before we move on, let's pause for a second and really bring this home for our listeners.
Yeah.
We've talked about the legal back and forth.
Yeah.
But I want to ask, does the freedom of contract argument really hold up in today's world?
Right.
Where finding affordable housing is increasingly difficult, especially in certain areas.
Right.
What happens when that freedom bumps up against the reality that people just need a roof over their heads?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It really is.
And it takes us beyond just these legal technicalities into this realm of social policy and economic realities, even moral considerations.
Yeah.
Because if landlords can essentially avoid responsibility for their negligence, what does that mean for the safety and well-being of those tenants?
Right.
Especially those who might have very limited options.
That's a perfect segue into our next segment.
Okay.
We've set the stage with this historical context, the legal arguments.
Right.
But now it's time to bring this case into the present.
Right.
What are the modern day implications of O'Callaghan? And how does it connect to the housing challenges we see playing out?
Absolutely.
In cities all across the country.
Yeah.
And even globally.
Well, one thing to consider is this growing affordability crisis in many urban areas.
Right.
You know, in cities where finding an affordable place to live is a constant struggle.
Yeah.
Tenants might have even less bargaining power than they did back in the 1950s.
Right.
So if landlords know that they can just include these exculpatory clauses and essentially escape accountability for their own negligence, does that then create an environment where cutting corners on safety and maintenance just becomes more likely?
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
It raises the question of whether this legal concept of freedom of contract starts to lose its meaning when the power dynamic is so heavily skewed.
Right.
What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a complex issue for sure.
Yeah.
On the one hand, the courts are supposed to uphold contracts.
Right.
There's a strong argument for respecting the agreements people make, even if they seem imbalanced on the surface.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the law is also designed to protect people from harm and to ensure fairness.
Right.
When we're talking about something as essential as housing, it's not always clear where that line should be drawn.
And we've seen this debate playing out in recent years.
Yeah.
With discussions around rent control, eviction protections, building codes,
uh-huh.
and the overall role of government in regulating housing.
Absolutely.
It seems like there's a growing recognition that the invisible hand of the market doesn't always work fairly when it comes to basic necessities.
Absolutely. And O'Callaghan provides this fascinating lens through which we can view these contemporary debates.
Yeah.
It shows how legal precedents from decades ago can still have ripple effects shaping the legal and social landscape in ways we might not even realize.
We've covered a lot of ground in this first segment.
We have.
But this conversation's far from over.
Oh, yeah.
When we come back, we'll explore how O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co. Has been cited in other cases.
Right.
And we'll dig deeper into the ongoing legal and legislative efforts to address the very issues we've been discussing.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned.
Yes. Welcome back to our deep dive into O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co.
Yeah.
Before the break, we were discussing the case's relevance to modern day housing challenges.
Yeah.
And what makes this case particularly interesting is how it's been interpreted and applied in these subsequent legal decisions.
So this wasn't just a one-and-done case?
Not at all.
That just kind of faded into legal obscurity?
No.
Interesting.
O'Callaghan has been cited in numerous cases dealing with exculpatory clauses, landlord-tenant law, and this broader issue of when contractual freedom might clash with public policy. And what's fascinating is that courts haven't always come to the same conclusions, even when they're using O'Callaghan as this reference point.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah. So, for instance, some courts have used O'Callaghan to uphold exculpatory clauses in these completely different contexts.
Oh,
like waivers people sign for risky recreational activities.
Okay.
So they argue that if you can waive liability for potential negligence in, say, a high-risk sport, then it stands to reason that you could do the same in a landlord-tenant agreement.
Okay.
But other courts have pushed back, saying O'Callaghan doesn't apply.
Right.
Because the need for housing is so fundamental,
it
creates a different kind of power dynamic.
Okay.
So they're arguing that housing is essential, and it deserves this special consideration.
So there's still a lot of debate about how far this precedent should reach.
Oh, absolutely.
What about on the legislative side? Have there been any attempts to address these concerns raised by O'Callaghan through actual laws?
Yes, there have been.
Okay.
In various states, lawmakers have tried to limit or even completely ban these exculpatory clauses in residential leases.
Oh, wow.
So some states have passed laws that specifically prohibit landlords from waiving liability for their negligence when it comes to those essential services like heat, water, or crucial safety features.
Okay.
Others have gone even further.
Okay.
Essentially declaring any attempt to waive liability for negligence in these residential leases as void from the start.
Oh, wow.
Just on the grounds of public policy.
It sounds like there's this growing recognition that this freedom of contract argument just might not hold up when it comes to the things people absolutely need, like a safe place to live.
Absolutely.
It's interesting to see how the legal and legislative landscape is shifting in response to cases like O'Callaghan.
It really is. It highlights a fundamental tension that we grapple with in a democratic society.
Yeah.
How do we balance these individual rights and freedoms with the need to protect this common good?
Right.
And O'Callaghan forces us to think critically about that balance.
Especially in the context of housing, which, as we've been discussing, is increasingly seen as a human right.
Absolutely.
So even though this case was decided like over 70 years ago,
I know,
it's far from a dusty relic of the past.
Yeah.
It continues to shape legal arguments and influence policy decisions that affect tons of people.
It really does. It's a prime example of how a landmark legal case can create this ripple effect that extends far beyond just the specific parties that are involved, impacting this broader legal and social fabric.
That brings us to a question for our listeners.
Okay.
We've kind of laid out the background and the legal arguments, but we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this case and its legacy?
Right.
Do you side with the majority opinion's emphasis on freedom of contract?
Yeah.
Or do the dissent's concerns about tenant protection resonate more strongly with you?
It's a case that raises so many thought-provoking questions.
Yeah.
Like, for example, what role should the courts play in regulating contracts?
Right.
Where there's this clear imbalance of power.
Yeah.
And how do we even define the boundaries of public policy when it comes to these private agreements?
Right.
These aren't easy questions to answer.
No.
And they go way beyond just landlord-tenant law.
They really do.
Yeah.
They touch on these fundamental principles of justice, of fairness, and the role of law in shaping our society.
Totally.
It's a conversation worth having.
Absolutely.
Especially as we navigate the complexities of these modern day housing challenges.
I agree. And while we might not have all the answers, it's so crucial to keep engaging with these questions.
Before we wrap up our deep dive, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier.
Sure.
This idea of housing as a human right.
Yeah.
That's a powerful concept.
It is.
And it seems to be gaining traction in recent years.
Yeah, it really is.
What are the implications of viewing housing through this lens?
Right.
And how does it connect back to the issues we've been discussing?
Well, it really shifts the entire conversation.
Okay.
If we acknowledge that housing is a fundamental human right, It means that everyone, regardless of income or background or circumstance,
right,
deserves access to safe, affordable, and dignified housing.
Right.
And this has profound implications for how we approach policy, how we allocate resources, and how we even tackle issues like homelessness, affordability, and discrimination in the housing market.
And it changes the way we think about the relationship between landlords and tenants, right?
Absolutely. It moves us away from this purely transactional, market-driven approach, right?
And acknowledges this power imbalance that often exists in these relationships.
Yeah.
So it suggests that landlords have responsibilities that go beyond just maximizing profit.
Right.
They have this obligation to ensure the well-being of their tenants.
Okay.
And to contribute to the creation of inclusive and thriving communities.
It feels like this conversation about housing as a human right is just the beginning.
It is.
Of a much larger exploration.
It is. And it's an exploration worth having.
Yeah.
As it goes to the heart of what kind of society we want to build.
Right.
And how we can ensure that everyone has that opportunity to live with dignity and security.
As we transition to our final segment.
Okay.
We want to leave our listeners with this thought.
Okay.
O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co. wasn't just about a legal dispute over a lease.
Right.
It opened up a conversation that continues to resonate to this day. Welcome back to our deep dives into O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co.
Before we moved on, we were talking about this idea of housing as a human right.
Right.
A concept that has huge implications for how we view the relationship between landlords and tenants, their legal responsibilities, and the role of government in all this.
Absolutely.
And it's fascinating how this case from the 1950s continues to spark such relevant and thought-provoking discussions even today.
It really does. It speaks to this lasting power of these landmark legal cases.
Right.
You know, they don't just settle these disputes between specific parties.
Yeah.
They often uncover these deeper societal tensions and force us to confront these really fundamental questions about fairness, justice, and this balance of power.
Exactly. O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co.
Yeah.
Is a perfect example.
It is.
It's not just some dusty old case about a lease agreement.
Right.
It's a window into these ongoing debates about contractual freedom, consumer protection.
Absolutely.
And this evolving understanding of housing as this fundamental human need.
Right.
And it's also crucial to recognize that this case highlights the interconnectedness of law, policy, and social change.
It does.
You know, court decisions can really shape public opinion.
Yeah.
Inspire legislative action.
Right.
Even influence cultural norms.
Yeah, they don't exist in a vacuum.
Absolutely. And we see that playing out right now.
Yes.
With this growing movement.
Yeah.
To recognize housing as a human right.
Absolutely.
And it's not just an abstract ideal.
No.
It's a call to action.
Yeah.
That is driving all these policy changes, legal challenges, and grassroots organizing efforts across the globe.
Absolutely.
And as we grapple with the complexities of these modern housing challenges, affordability crises, displacement, homelessness, cases like O'Callaghan provide a valuable historical and legal context for understanding how we got here and what options we even have for creating a more just and equitable housing system.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into this case, what are some key takeaways we want our listeners to walk away with?
Okay.
What stands out to you as the most crucial points of this discussion?
Well, first and foremost, I hope our listeners gained a deeper understanding of these legal arguments on the heart of O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co. Especially this tension between the principle of freedom of contract and this need to protect vulnerable parties.
I agree, and I think it's crucial to remember that this case was a product of its time.
Right.
Shaped by the social, economic, and political forces of the 1950s.
Yeah.
You know, the post-war housing shortage and the prevailing legal views on landlord-tenant relationships played a significant role in the court's decision.
Absolutely.
And by understanding that historical context, we can better appreciate how legal thought has evolved since then.
Yeah.
And these ongoing efforts
Right.
to adapt legal principles to these changing societal needs.
Right.
We've also seen how this case has had a ripple effect on landlord-tenant law, inspiring both legislative actions to limit these exculpatory clauses and legal challenges to their enforceability.
Absolutely.
It's clear that O'Callaghan's legacy continues to shape this legal landscape.
Yeah, it does.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that legal precedents aren't static.
No.
They're constantly being interpreted, challenged, and refined
right.
in light of new circumstances and evolving social values.
Yeah. What was considered acceptable in the past
right.
might not hold up under today's scrutiny.
Finally, I think this case really compels us
yeah.
to think critically about the role of housing in our society.
Absolutely.
And to engage in these meaningful conversations
mm-hmm.
about how we can ensure everyone has access to safe, affordable, and dignified housing.
I couldn't agree more. This conversation goes beyond just these legal technicalities.
Yeah.
It's about social justice.
Right.
Human dignity.
Yeah.
And the kind of world we want to live in.
Right.
It's about recognizing that having a safe and secure place to call home
yeah.
is just essential for human flourishing.
That's a perfect note to end on.
It is.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into O'Callaghan v. Waller and Beckwith Realty Co.
It was my pleasure.
We hope this exploration has sparked your curiosity.
Yeah.
Challenged your assumptions and inspired you to continue exploring this fascinating world of law.
Absolutely.
And its impact on our lives.
It's everywhere.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case.
Yeah.
And the issues it raises.
Please share them with us.
Until next time.